young people are, especially for the last couple of years, we see young activists from all across the globe receiving media coverage, just getting featured on press and being invited to big international conferences as speakers. But that shouldn't be the stopping point for us. That should be just the beginning.
That's Celine Uzunaldum, a 19-year-old gender equality activist from Turkey.
It is incredible that big organizations and governments want to include us, but we don't want to be there just for the picture. If you say that you want our voices and demands to be heard, then give us a seat at the decision-making table.
This is Finding Humanity, and I'm your host, Hazami Bermada. Through true stories of courage and purpose, we put a human face on the biggest challenges of our time. This season, we will focus on how women's excellence shapes history. Across cultures, inspiring women and girls continue to break records and blaze trails, shattering glass ceilings while imagining and innovating the way forward. In each episode, we bring you powerful voices of women, sharing challenges they had to overcome across different fields and cultures, and their journeys to achieving greatness. Celine grew up in Istanbul, the capital of Turkey. Like many other children her age, she grew up watching Disney films.
I always loved those, you know, Disney princesses, but I always asked questions about why they're not the heroes in their own stories. Why do they always need a man to save them? Why do they have to get married at the end of the story? And it's like, you know, love at first sight, and they're teenagers. They're not the people who fight with the villains, for example. Even those little things I remember caught my attention when I was like around 5 years old, probably. And later on, when I was around probably 7 or 8, I remember I really wanted to learn more about gender equality. You know, I always asked questions about the social construct, the social norms, the gender roles and stereotypes, and why they exist, how we can break those stereotypes. What can we do?
Can you tell us a bit more about how your parents and your community maybe responded or reacted to your questioning cultural systems and social constructs?
I would say my parents really loved it, because actually my father gets so much hate on media for being not a traditional Turkish father, because he's all about equality. He wants to learn more about inclusivity, diversity, how we can have like a more gender equal language, for example. How can we reduce those stereotypes? He's very interested in that. And he always encouraged me to do the same thing. I remember one time when I was a little child, he said, you know what? It is okay for you to be my little princess, but you also have to be the boss in your life, you know? Which is just something I believe all fathers should tell to their daughters.
Celine took this advice to heart, but it wasn't until she was 17 that she decided to do something to challenge the harmful gender stereotypes that surrounded her.
You can have an idea, but you need just that one specific spark to just walk the walk rather than talk the talk. So for me, that was my little brother, who was around 6 years old. We were sitting on our little, you know, table in our little kitchen, a very cozy atmosphere. And we were just talking about life and future and education. And we were talking about university. And my brother said, in a very casual way, he said, hey, you don't really actually have to worry about school. I mean, if you can not get into a good university or cannot find a well-paid job, you could just easily get married. And women are so lucky in that sense. And that was the moment when I said, okay, there is a problem. The problem is real, because it is such a toxic mindset, even inside of my like little brother's head. And I thought I grew up in such a feminist atmosphere, such a equal, diverse, inclusive, accepting family. But even my brother had that same thought structure, because that is what he has been seeing from our circle, like from our society in general. So I said, okay, these children will be the leaders of tomorrow. So if we want to change something, we have to do it now.
The very next day, Celine sent an email to UN Women. She asked to get involved with the He for She movement, a global effort to engage men and boys in the fight for gender equality. Celine started a He for She club in her high school, becoming the youngest representative of the movement in Turkey. She was visiting schools across the country and introducing the movement to other students. Soon after becoming involved with He for She, Celine founded the first Girl Up Club in Turkey. Girl Up is a United Nations Foundation's campaign that provides leadership training to inspire girls to be a force for gender equality and social change. I spoke to Melissa Kilby, the executive director of Girl Up, to better understand the evolution of youth activism. Just like Celine, Melissa also shared that she felt a desire to be an advocate at an early age.
As a young person, I always felt like untapped. You know, I always felt like meant for more, and I could do more, and I could do something bigger, but just wasn't in an environment where I could access that. There was internet, but barely, you know, dial up and sharing an email with your dad and like a little bit of instant messenger. But we just didn't have access to the same role models, the same views into what was happening in other places. I grew up in a small town in the Midwest, just in this bubble. And when I learned about Girl Up, I remember thinking, oh my God, I wish that we would have had this when I was younger, because this is exactly what I was looking for and didn't know.
Young people have historically led social change. For example, students were at the forefront of the U.S. civil rights movement in the 1960s. They protested the Vietnam War and racial injustice through organized groups such as the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. But as Melissa alluded to, the digital age has provided us with new tools, allowing more teens around the world to become advocates for issues they care about.
I think that more young people are more involved today, right? Like, I think we know that youth are usually boundary pushers. It's usually young people who are flipping norms and changing things, you know, throughout history, right? We kind of know that. I think what's different about the youth advocacy and activism moment that we're in today is that there are more young people in it, because they can connect to each other, to information, and to platforms in a much wider and more accessible way, right? If you have a smartphone anywhere in the world, you can be plugged into a bigger movement, a la Girl Up. But you're also inundated with more information about other things happening outside of your own bubble, your own sort of community and friend circle and family circle and sort of day-to-day life. And so they know what they're talking about because they can do their research, they can read, they can talk, they can watch talks, they can listen to podcasts, they can educate themselves. And at 17 years old, they know what they're talking about. We didn't know until we got into these institutions or till we were out in the world and had to experience it. And think about the generations who didn't even realize how bad it was until 10 years later, they turned around and looked and said, oh, wow, well, look what I just went through, right? So I think what's happening is the learning curve is so much shorter. They are equipped with sometimes more knowledge than us because we didn't do our research. We're just living it. Young people have more tools and more information. And so they are, I hope and believe, more effective and will be more effective and have even more potential than other youth generations that we've seen that have created real change for the world.
Celine's experience resonates with what Melissa shared.
The reason why young people are interested in creating change and learning more about social issues is because we're living in the 21st century where we were born into technology and internet. Therefore, I would say, especially with the pandemic, we were able to connect with the world on a wholesome level. We can just learn more about what's going on in US, for example, with one tweet. We can learn more about what's going on in Africa over an Instagram post. And we can just have a wider perspective and more inclusive perspective. We have the opportunity to learn more about different cultures. What are the problems in that culture? Like, what do people think? What do they want to change? And do we have that kind of problem in our culture as well? Young people want to learn more about these social issues, and they are eager to find solutions. They want to hop on board and actually do something on the ground to make real and sustainable change. For example, when I first started like He for She, I remember I was just so scared of the reaction I could get. And I started receiving, I'm not kidding, dozens of invitations from other high schools around Turkey, just wanting to learn more about the issue.
Besides being involved with He for She and Girl Up, Selin is the founder of the first Girls Who Code in Turkey. Girls Who Code is an organization that teaches the basics of coding to girls. Selin is also working with the United Nations Girls Education Initiative on their Transform Education campaign, whose goal is to advance gender equality in our educational curriculum. Like Selin, teen women advocates have come to the forefront in recent years. Pakistani education activist Malala Yousafzai, Syrian refugee Mazun al-Malhan, and Swedish climate champion Greta Thunberg are some of the most heard of examples. These young women play a critical role in inspiring others to advocate for change.
Just a couple of months later, I started Girl Up Istanbul. I started receiving dozens of emails and DMs from different cities all across Turkey, and just asking me questions about how they could get involved, if it was possible for them to start their own clubs and just, you know, do voluntary things, because this is something they genuinely care about and want to learn more about, and they have never been given an opportunity before, maybe. And with all of these movements that are now being recognized around Turkey, we are able to give these people an opportunity to fight for the cause they're passionate about. And if I'm the one who inspired that person to do something about social justice, that is just such an incredible thing. It's just once in a lifetime opportunity, I would say. It has happened so many times after a workshop, after a seminar, etc. Young girls and young boys as well, or people from my age or adults, like coming up to me and telling me that I have inspired them and now they want to do something and asking me how and what they can do it. And I have always had such very strong role models in my life, whom I look up to till this day. Michelle Obama, Princess Diana, or Katniss Everdeen from The Hunger Games. You know, just looking up to those incredible women and just having their beliefs and their characters like buried inside me. And they made me the person I am today, like so many different women in so many different fields. They have all contributed to me. And I feel like I now have the opportunity to honor them in a sense.
At Girl Up, Melissa also witnessed how important it is for girls to have role models like Selin.
I mean, I remember in the earliest years of Girl Up and some of the trips that I got to take to visit our UN partners. And I remember being in a village and saying, yeah, this woman went to school, she went into university, she became a nurse, she came back into the community and was a nurse. So then every single girl in that community knew that she could be a nurse. And if you went around and asked everybody what they wanted to be when they grew up, they said, I'm going to be a nurse. Because now they knew what that was. They had the reference point. And I think what I love so much about youth movements is that it's not what you aspire to grow up to be, it's who you aspire to be today. When you see your peers, especially girls that look like you or come from similar backgrounds, maybe similar immigration experience or similar religions or cultures, and you see them leading, you're like, wait, I can do that actually right now. So there isn't this feeling of, okay, I have a role model. She's older than me. I've got some time. I can work towards that. Now I have a goal that I didn't know I could have before, which is incredibly empowering. But I think what's so cool about this broadening of representation and young people actually being the representation for each other is that it's inspiring even more and more of that, right? When you saw Malala, how many more girls are out there as education activists? You know, there's Greta, there's Mari, there's these people who have these huge platforms. It's an aspirational goal, but it's a little bit tangible because they're your age, you know? And then you see maybe someone else in your community get an award for service or activism, or you see a girl profiled on our social and she's just, you know, she's in her town doing her thing in her school. And you're like, I can do that too. And then you do it. And then we have this ripple effect of impact of more young people doing the things that they see their peers do and their role models do. But the fact that they have diverse role models who are also their age sometimes is actually more powerful than the older women that they're aspiring to be down the road.
Another reason why having young leaders is especially valuable for our society is because of their sense of urgency.
I think sometimes older leaders don't have the same urgency because they've been in it and it's like progress is slow and tides change is slow. And it's like, great, you can say that because you've lived it, but that's not good enough anymore. And I think this, especially the youngest generation, Gen Z and the high schoolers, they were born straight into this knowledge and information. They were born straight into some of these things like climate crisis. It was a crisis when they were born. They have only lived in climate crisis. They're like, what are you talking about 2050? What are you talking about? We didn't even talk about 2022. Like, what are we doing right now? Because that is the only thing they know. And so I think when you have this empowerment of knowledge and information, along with this being the only lived experience they've had, there is no time. They are holding us to the fire because they feel the fire. I think the other thing is throughout recent history, we kind of went from like one crisis to another and then a new one. But then that one was kind of like past. And right now they're all on top of each other all at the same time. And so that makes it also feel more urgent. And guess what? These 17-year-olds get it. They already understand that. And so there's just no messing around, and they will not allow us to move as slow as we have been. Because we've moved as slow as we have, they were born right into this, and this is the only experience that they know.
Celine agrees that her generation, the Gen Z, is especially sensitive to cultural issues. Gen Z is a cohort following millennials that are born between the late 1990s and early 2010s.
I believe that Gen Z really realizes that the world leaders aren't doing enough. They say that they do something. They say that they want to change things, but it doesn't really happen. We don't see them happen. Everything just gets stuck in like policy and bureaucracy. And young people have innovative ideas. They have bright minds and we're willing to question the status quo. We will be living with the consequences of the decisions that are being made by today's leaders, world leaders. And we don't want that. It's going to be our future. And later on, it's going to be our children's future. And we must have a say in that. We don't want to, you know, look back 30 years after this and just say we could have done better because we saw this coming. We would rather just speak up right now and fight for the cause we believe in.
This passion makes young advocates like Celine hard to ignore. And world leaders have started to include youth voices in the conversation. But sadly, youth representatives have often felt tokenized. And even if they have a seat at the table, their voices aren't always heard.
I personally faced this hundreds of times, where I was, for example, invited to a meeting and I would be just, you know, talking with adults, etc. And they would take me seriously. They would ask my opinions, what my thoughts are, etc. But the moment I would tell them my age, especially when I was a minor, they would just, you know, pat on the back and would just go, "Oh, sweetie, good for you." Which is actually very misogynistic as well, in my opinion, because I've realized that I have so many men activist friends who are on the same age as I am, but they would never have that kind of attitude, you know, just, "Oh, sweetie, you're doing great." No, people would say, "Oh, I'm looking at the leader of tomorrow." Like when it's a girl who is a minor and just talks about she wants to do something, it's just a pat on the back. And for the last couple of years, we see young activists from all across the globe receiving media coverage, just getting featured on press and being invited to big international conferences as speakers. But that shouldn't be the stopping point for us. That should be just the beginning. It is incredible that big organizations and governments want to include us in, you know, different meetings, conferences, forums, events, etc. But we don't want to be window decorations. We don't want to be there just for the picture. If you say that you want our voices and demands to be heard, then give us a seat at the decision-making table.
Even in the cases where organizations have a youth board, young people aren't often the ones making decisions.
Associations like NGOs and corporations, especially in private sector, they have like a youth board of activists, but they're not being invited to meetings with the big bosses. If it's going to be like a voting procedure, for example, they're not being invited. These are the stuff that I personally have faced as well. And I don't think we're asking much, to be honest. Just, you know, give us a seat at the decision-making table and just don't have one young person at the table to say that we are there. They do care about us. We should start immediately, like reducing tokenism immediately and making sure that young people are involved in a meaningful way.
What would you say to somebody who says young people are passionate, but they just don't understand how systems work?
Well, make us understand it. How do you expect us to know everything about like how you run a corporate, how you write a report, for example, how you do a presentation, blah, 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 how you advocate for something? We know that we don't know everything, but we just want guidance. We want mentorship. We want to be able to learn. If you say, "Oh, you don't know this, sorry," and shut the door in our faces, like how do you expect us to learn and grow into our roles? Offer us a hand. We want to take it. We want to learn from your experiences, but we also want to share our experiences because I'm sure that they will be very different and the same at the same time because A, we fight for the same cause, yes, but B, we're from a different generation with different ideas and demands and different work ethic even, but we want to learn more. And that is why intergenerational and multi-generational dialogues are incredibly, crucially important in that sense.
Melissa agrees that youth voices are often not taken seriously enough.
A lot of people are inspired by the youth activism that they see on social media, on the news, on the covers of magazines. They're like, "That's so great. Good for them. You go, young people. You inspire me. That's a great boost for me to like get through my meetings today." They don't take it seriously always. And I think that resonates to then how young people are engaged when they're even invited into these spaces. It's like, "You are here to inspire me and make me feel better so I can do the hard work." Not like, "You are here because I value your perspective, your lived experience, and your understanding of this issue, and that I am hoping that you will show me a different way to do it." If they actually respected, trusted, and appreciated and wanted to learn a new way of doing things, then that engagement would look totally different. And so I think we're at this position where everyone knows they're supposed to include the young people, but they aren't really doing it from a genuine place of wanting to be changed by young people. And without that, it can be flat, there can be tension, or it can be dismissive. And then you've actually done more damage by doing it badly than by being a partner. And I think what I really hope that more established professionals and leaders and these decision makers can learn quickly is we are not getting it right. It is getting worse in so many ways. And in some ways, maybe a little bit has gotten better, but we have not seen drastic improvement on crisis that we've been fighting for generations. We need a new way to do this. We do not know better. We have not done better. And so let's give young people a real voice and actually take and consider their ideas as we would for with any of our peers. And if we could do that, maybe we can actually start to do things different and the young people will feel heard and respected and valued, and they will want to continue to engage to help that progress move forward.
And to tie into something we talked about earlier, which is also giving access for young people into spaces where high-level decisions are also made, what does intergenerational leadership look like and how can people make space for young people?
I think that youth advisory groups are great if used well. I think there is a place for that. I think making sure that you have somebody who knows how to work with youth who can run those things, which sometimes is a missing piece. But I think you have to have full buy-in from the top that this is not just an exercise in checking a box of what is expected, but that if you have influential leaders who actually seek out these conversations and want to listen and learn, that's really important. But I think inviting is the first step. Creating a group of peers who can work through things together so that you are not the only, making sure that there is a person managing those peer groups that can be effective bridge between youth and the dynamism that they might be approaching. And then, you know, the more established leaders who may bulk and like, do you have someone who can navigate that well? And if you're going to do it, make sure that your most senior leadership actually wants it, because otherwise it will all be performative.
Celine continues to challenge gender stereotypes and inspire others to be change makers, including her little brother.
He's actually one of my biggest supporters at the moment. He wants to be a part of He for She in high school, and he wants to be involved in Girls to Code. I have seen this so many times where he was just correcting his classmates or his peer friends when they use a sexist word or like make a sexist joke and be like, hey, that's not okay. Let me inform you about why it's not okay and how we can change that, you know, how we can be all feminist. And he's so proud, because one thing I have realized, especially boys and men feel like they can't be feminists. It's like if they are feminists, they're being like fragile. They're not being masculine enough. And that is, again, something we should change as well. Just break that stereotype as well. And I'm so honored to see my brother internalizing that.
Celine hopes to also inspire you and to remind others of the lesson her father taught her.
You have to be the change you want to see in the world. If not me, then who? If not now, then when? Just keep asking that question to yourself whenever you need some confidence and some motivation to keep on going. And if you are a father of a daughter, just make sure that she's, yes, your princess, but she is also the boss of her life, and make sure that she knows that.
We have a lot of work to do to create a just, equitable, and compassionate world. We hope that this episode inspired you to support youth at the forefront of driving change. There are many ways to do that. Here are just a few suggestions. First, do your part to lift and elevate youth voices. Share their work, advocacy, and views. Second, support youth organizations in your community. You can support them financially, volunteer with them, or invite them to your events. And lastly, be an ally. When you see youth voices being dismissed, use your voice and your platform to challenge it. If you'd like to hear more empowering stories from Finding Humanity or to learn more about this episode,
visit our website at findinghumanitypodcast.com. Please subscribe, rate, and review the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. Your ratings and reviews help Finding Humanity reach new audiences, so we thank you for your support. In our podcast, we cover pressing and at times controversial social and political issues. The views and opinions expressed are those of the interviewees and do not reflect the positions or opinions of the producers or any affiliated organizations. Finding Humanity is a joint production of the Humanity Lab Foundation and Human Group Media. Our co-executive producers are Camille Lorente and Hazami Bermada. Associate producers are Fernanda Oliegas and Tani Jirapaprasok. Policy and background research by Carolina Mindica and Tani Jirapaprasok. Mixing, editing, and music by Maverick Aquino. For this episode, I'd like to thank Celine Osnaldom and Melissa Kilby. I'm your host, Hazami Bermada. Thank you for listening, and I look forward to seeing you again on the next episode.